Welcome back to the Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2020. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again by FB Donkey. Welcome back, mate.
G'day, mate. Good to be back. How's the summer?
Long and restful, as it always is for us. This is our 12th year that we're kicking on. A fine dozen seasons for us under the belt after we tick this one off. So excited to be back, well-rested, and I'm actually looking for a bit of redemption after going back-to-back the previous two seasons. Last season was a bit of a drop-off for us. So looking forward to a cracker, mate. How about you?
Yeah, I had a shocker last year, so keen to get back and have a much, much better year this year. 12 seasons, huh? I wonder how many podcasts out there have been going for 12 years.
Yep, not a lot that I listen to have gone to 12 years. So I remember sort of being a kid and looking at the year 2020 and going, holy shit, that's such a long, long way away. And 12 years later, we're still doing the same show together. So thank you all of our listeners that have been following for that long, if any of you have been following for that long, those that we've picked up along the way, and certainly any new listeners for the year, welcome. We focus on high-level strategy, and our preseason shows are split by analysis by position, Mark. So we're starting with the midfield this week. Have you done much looking at your Supercoach team, and how confident are you of giving some valuable or good advice for this show, Mark?
I have spent a bit of time on it, mate, and I'm looking forward to this show because I probably, like a lot of our listeners, do need to get a bit more clarity around the midfield positions and which premiums to pick. And I find that even though I've got opinions, working through the show, it's a bit like working out what we should be doing going forward. And for those that are new, people will know that we don't tell people what they should be doing, but we sort of talk through our options and our thought processes, and hopefully people can get reads out of that and work out their own opinions based on part of our discussion.
Awesome, mate. So the way we're going to structure up this show is we're going to start by looking at the top averaging players from season 2019, because that's generally the best place to start in terms of picking your premiums. You're looking for the guys who've had an established tradition of success, and sort of the most immediate history is generally the pointer that you want to pay the most attention to. But of course, we'll look at a few of the premiums that potentially had an off year, dropped out, and present a little bit of value as well. But we'll start off by looking at those rolled gold options, Mark. And oftentimes, it's actually pretty good advice to just lock in some of these top options rather than overthinking it too much, trying to snipe some value here or there and ending up with a bit of a dud pick. It's pretty important to get your premiums right because they are the highest scoring position on field. And generally that means we pay a little bit overs at the start of the season, but that security and the comfort of knowing that you potentially have, you know, a top eight player is what often seals the deal with that high price tag.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's interesting this year that there's no Gary Ablett, Patrick Dangerfield sort of $750,000 options. So there's a whole lot of 600,000 plus options that are all bunched together, and quite a lot of them could work out to be pretty good picks.
I think last year we had eight players average 114.7 or higher. So it was pretty deep midfield last year. We didn't have any of those crazy outliers as we've had in previous seasons. Mark, like you mentioned, the 130 pluses, but we had quite a few in that 120 range. So McRae, Neil, Fife all hit 120 plus with a couple nipping at their heels. And to a certain degree, I find sorting through the list, at least putting the rundown together, it potentially is sort of a little bit of a clearer cut between sort of that top echelon versus the rest, just because the discrepancy is so large with having sort of such a class of 115 plus type averaging players. Some seasons, yeah, when the basement's a bit lower, closer to that 110 mark, you can look at a few of those premiums that present a little bit of value that might nudge themselves into that, you know, top eight bracket. But this year it feels like, you know, that standing a bit head and shoulders above the rest, and we'll get into some of that detail, but wondering how you feel about that, Mark.
Yeah, I think you're pretty right there, mate, and I think that in the past there has been a good chance that if you can pick up someone in the 450 to 500 range and they're going to average 105, then you'd be quite comfortable with that, and it'd end up being quite a decent result, or a mid-pricer that could come right up and average sort of just below the top level of range. But like you say, if there's eight players over 114, you want to get as many players averaging over 110 as possible.
All right. So before we get into the show, just a couple of quick plugs as we do to start our show most of the year. And that's, we're going to start by plugging our leagues, Mark. So I've opened back up the ranked league registration, which have seen us dominate the top 20 ranks for a good part of the decade. Now, if you're keen to get involved in a highly competitive league experience and give yourself a best shot at repping the community for finishing as that top-ranked league, please sign up. I will post the link to that in the podcast notes, but you can also find that at supercoachcoach.com.au/forums. We've also got a bit of a Discord server going, which for those of you who aren't familiar with Discord, it's essentially a live sort of chat or a chat room that you can join in. Last year, we had a decent amount of momentum with that, especially sort of injuries and late changes. That was a pretty good spot to get involved and get some notifications. If you're interested in joining that to have a bit of a chat on top of our forums, I'll also post links to that Discord on our podcast notes. And don't forget, as always, we are re-kicking off the Patreon sponsorship program for season 2020. So if you want to support the show, say thanks for the bit of advice that we give you and hopefully a little bit of enjoyment as well throughout the season. Mark and I get fairly stuck into that rivalry and we very much appreciate sort of any of the support that you can help out the show with. I think we've said it sort of profusely in the past, but we wouldn't still be going without the support of the community. And so if you are keen to sort of join up and get a few extras as well, last year I think we recorded close to one episode for every 1.5 episodes released of the regular show, you got a Patreon bonus as well. So if you're keen to get involved, get some bonus content, sign up, patreon.com/supercoachcoach. There'll be more details around some other preseason stuff like the unranked leagues and so on as we go along. But those are the initial plugs for the first step back.
Good job, mate.
All right. That's lots of preamble. Should we get into it, mate?
Sure. Let's start picking some teams.
All right. Let's start off by running through the top 8 averages in the midfield from last year. And Jack McRae is sitting up top of the rest at the moment with an average of 123.2. Not only that, good old durable Jack McRae played another 22-game season, which is awesome. Really pushed himself ahead of the pack over the last 2 seasons. So it's not just one season that he's done it now, Mark, in terms of setting himself as almost the preeminent midfield scorer and also having that element of reliability to him. Question marks over how he'd be impacted by, you know, Bontempelli and Dunkley and so on. But, gee, the kid just keeps racking him up, Mark. Is he locked into your team? How do you see Jack McRae? He's almost like a... Even though we talked about no place particularly sort of standing head and shoulders above the rest, he feels like one that's almost the most reliable sort of captaincy or vice-captaincy backup option these days.
Yeah, just the consistency and durability make it pretty hard to leave him out of his squad. Bulldogs do seem like they could potentially be in for a decent year. He is definitely on the edge of my team. He's not in my current version, but the current version is fairly loose still. And I'm probably will end up picking at least one of him or Dunkley.
Let's get straight into Dunkley then, Mark, seeing as you've already mentioned him, and I think it's relevant sort of having the conversation of all these sort of Bulldogs players together. Dunkley finished the year averaging the 6th most with 116.5 points. Of course, he was available on the forward line last year. This year, he's a sole mid, which makes the decision quite a lot harder than when we got to tuck him into our forward line last year. The other one, from the Bulldogs, who finished as the 8th highest averaging midfield for the year, is Bontempelli. So you've got 3 of the top 8 highest averaging Supercoach midfielders, all from the Bulldogs. They all played 22 games as well, Mark. Do you reckon they can maintain that level of scoring for another season?
That's part of the tricky question that we're going to have to get through. And Bontempelli seems almost like a clear third out of who you would pick out of that. And that's crazy in a way because he's into his 7th season. And he's averaged over 100 every season except for his first one. And last year was his first one where he's averaged 114. It seems like it may turn out that he actually turns out to be the best of the 3 of them. Also has great durability. But can you have 3 gun mids from one team, and does that cap their ceiling a little bit? We have seen it before with Geelong and Collingwood a long time ago that they were able to sustain that and still have the sort of Pendlebury Swans, Ablett completely dominating the scoring as well. So I don't think that's enough to rule him out. At the moment, I have him sitting third out of them, just probably because of role as much as anything. McRae, you know he's going to play midfield every single week. Dunkley had that experiment early in the year where he probably did play that bit more forward, and that's affected his final average. So if you take out those first 5 or 6 weeks where he did play forward, his average is even higher. Whereas Bont, depending on injuries, they may, I know they've recruited Josh Bruce this year, but they may just need him forward at times, which has always been probably the one thing that's capped his scoring. So potentially all really good options. Could you see yourself picking more than one of them?
Probably not. I think just taking a risk on one of them and sort of punting that they'll be the ones to stand above gives you the opportunity to also hedge against a certain player. I feel like if you select two or three, you're potentially sort of going to get the average between them all. And so if you're really confident in the Western Bulldogs' total scoring, you might go for that approach. But if you have some question marks whether or not they can replicate that, then I think you're better off taking a risk on one of them. And take essentially by doing that, you take a position against a couple of the others. I think part of that question will be answered when we get a better understanding of the overall team structure, though. Something that is very hard to do at this stage of the season is look to team structure, because the rookies and to a certain extent some of the obvious mid prices largely determine the shape of our teams. And these days the shape of the teams look very similar, sort of bar one or two changes in terms of premium and rookie mixes across the lines. But at this stage, it's hard to say whether you'll go with four or five or whatever the case may be. And so you might get to a point where if you're having lots of premium mids because of the way the teams are being structured, then potentially you might pick two. But sort of in terms of early days, I think I'd prefer to try and select one.
Taking into consideration the value that they present, so Bont being the cheapest, Dunkley in the middle, and McRae being the most expensive midfielder in the competition, how would you rank them 1, 2, 3?
Taking value into consideration, I would probably have to put Dunkley 3, because I think McRae is done it a couple seasons in a row. Dunkley is only done it once. And I think when I look at sort of raw potential and ability to hurt me if I don't select them, I see like Dunkley potentially managing to replicate what he did last season, but potentially not going much beyond that. Whereas Bontempelli, I still feel like he's got the potential to, you know, get up to that 125 range. He's just so point dense in the way that he plays football. He plays in those clutch moments. He converts important goals. He takes contested marks. So I guess Dunkley 3 for me. McRae probably 2, considering value, and Bontempelli up there sort of as number 1. But if you're just going on who do you think's most likely to stay in the top 8 by the end of the year, then I would probably have McRae at 1 and then maybe Bontempelli at 2 and then Dunkley at 3, just because of that forward risk that you mentioned previously. I don't know. It's tough because you have to consider a hybrid of those views to land at your final opinion, and that's where sort of each individual's sort of perspective lies in calling that.
Yeah, right. That's a pretty good summary there, mate. I think just on likelihood to start my team, which I think is really looking at that's ultimately value perspective,
plus
is yep. I would probably have McRae 1, Dunkley 2, Bont 3. I just think that Dunkley's average is a few points lower given the way he started last year. And if you add sort of the last 6 games of 2018 he has done it for a bit more than a season. But it's tricky because a bit like you, like I wouldn't be surprised at all if Bont ended up being the top scorer out of a lot of them. So potentially all good picks. I think that there will probably be at least 10 points between the one that finishes with the highest average and the lowest average out of the three. So I think that there is sort of a decent amount of points over the season that you'll get from getting this decision right. But I do agree that I'd probably just be looking at taking one. And at the moment, that's probably McRae with Dunkley coming second.
For anyone considering potentially starting more than one of them, and like I said, it'll get a little bit more obvious once the preseason plays out, do note, you know, Bulldogs, they barely won more games than they lost last year, 12 wins, 10 losses. And so even though these three racked up a huge amount of their Supercoach points, if they win potentially more games in 2020 than they did in 2019, it will sort of mitigate the risk of the overall Bulldogs pie shrinking and therefore the ability of these three players to retain that sort of high level of scoring. So all three could work out pretty darn well, which probably doesn't give anybody sort of definitive levers to pick a player on. But that's, like you said at the top of the show, Mark, that's what we like to do, sort of give you the different sort of considerations that we're thinking through so that you can make your own decision. When we don't like a player, we generally call it out pretty strong. All right, let's go to the second highest averaging player, Mark, Lachie Neal. Now, last year, we didn't start with him, and gee, he burst out of the blocks. And that certainly hurt us a little bit more, Mark, specifically the two of us, relative to quite a few teams out there. Are you going to make that same gamble again this year, or will you be all about the Lachie Neal train for 2020?
That's a tricky one because he doesn't present as much value as he did last year. So last year he was coming off 110, now he's coming up 120, so a lot more expensive. And he did probably taper off a little bit in his scoring as the season went on. He had sort of that big 190 game in the second last round, and still some big games, but he did show that there were games that he could get tagged out of, which has sort of been a bit of an issue in the past. And although there's a few midfielders developing up at the Lions, he is going to be the number one target for the tagger every week. And when he wasn't tagged last year, he just went completely nuts. So I think he'll probably get a little bit more attention this year. I think the thing that draws me to Lachie is probably not that I would expect him to be able to score too much more than he has. It's the fact that he's missed two games in the last six seasons. So that sort of durability, just pick him, nuts, lock him away, is pretty valuable, I think, over the course of the season. So that's probably the one factor that's drawing me to... He's in my current team, but because I don't think he provides a heap of value with scoring potential, except for unless he has like a couple of really, really big games early, that's what makes him on the edge.
Yeah, I think the durability highlight that you raised is certainly very relevant when considering a player for the preseason. You don't really want to pick any starting players that will get injured through the first half of the year. If they get injured within the first five or six rounds, you generally can live with that pretty okay, because you can sideways trade before you hit the upgrade period. But once you're in that upgrade cadence where ideally every week you're doing one upgrade, one downgrade to complete your team, dealing with a player that is highly injury prone and potentially sidelined means that, one, you have to make a decision between pausing your upgrading and essentially being a week behind from that moment on, copping a rookie score instead of a premium, which early days makes a huge, huge difference. Especially depending on sort of the quality of the rookie pool. So Lachie Neal's durability can't really be understated from that point of view. And potentially, depending on sort of how risk averse you are with your starting selections, just that in and of itself might be enough, even if he might be minus five in terms of the value stakes, just because he's never scaled these sorts of heights before.
And I think that the next player on our list, it's really interesting to compare those two. So Neal versus Fife. I think that Fife, his highest average ever is 123.7, so it's not that much higher than what Neal got last year, and it was when Fremantle were actually a better team. But I would think that of the two, Fife probably has a higher ceiling. His durability is much, much worse than Neal. He has never played 22 games in a season. He's played 21 and 20 in two of the last three seasons, so he's close, but just missing those games really takes off his average compared to Neal, and I wonder whether you would consider Fife over Neal.
Looking at the top eight averages from last year versus the top eight total points getters, Nat Fife goes from being third to dropping down to eighth overall, from average to total points. I think last year I picked Fife because he presented some value. This year, with Fife being the third highest averaging and that injury risk, I think he's the least attractive option of the potentially the five that we've talked about so far.
Yeah, I actually do agree with that, and it's really purely just a durability thing. I guess that one factor that I always probably put in play a little bit is just the joy factor of watching them. And barracking for Fife is very fun, and barracking against him is not fun at all. And so that does factor just a little bit into my decision-making. Like my seven-year-old was picking his team the other day, and his first two non-Essendon players were Fifey and Dusty. Just because they're so much fun to watch, and I feel that a little bit as well. So, yeah, I think that it factors in a small amount, but from a rational analytic perspective, I think that Fife, yeah, really does finish in that the lowest of the players that we've talked about so far.
Just off Supercoach a little bit and just onto that quick sidebar, I mean, wow, that's nuts. 12 years ago, the little fella didn't even exist. 12 years into the show now, and you've got your son picking your first team, mate. How does that feel? It's crazy. Yeah,
he's pretty keen. And he, I've let him pick McDonald, Tip and Woody because it's his favourite player. But yeah, no, we've definitely come a long way, mate. And he loves numbers and he loves footy, so he'll be all over it.
All right, awesome. Maybe you can carry the torch and take over for us sooner rather than later.
In another 12 years.
All right, let's get on to the next player. Now, this bloke's a bit challenging to evaluate because he's basically a golden child, both in the AFL circles but in Supercoach circles as well. But durability last year was an issue, and that's Josh Kelly. He only managed 14 games. He's the fourth highest averaging player, but certainly season was a little bit derailed by a combination of injuries and some bad luck there. But, you know, with an average of 117.4, and most people sort of seeing him as a player that might even break that 120, 125 mark and be a Gary Ablett type player. He certainly tempts a lot of people with his smooth skill and high ability to rack up points per disposal. And his high running style means he gets plenty of those disposals as well. He's one I'm finding pretty hard to evaluate, Mark. Where do you sit on Josh Kelly?
So I think that part of our decision making is that with these numbers, you have to gamble somewhere. So you have to sort of gamble on a player that maybe does have durability concerns, actually turning that around and maybe playing out the full season or going on a huge run early. And I just think that the combination of Kelly presenting a bit of quite a bit of value, I think, at only averaging 117, given what he's shown, the trajectory that he's shown in the past of where he maybe will end up averaging. The fact that he sort of started the year really well last year, despite the fact that he came in after a really interrupted preseason and then was a bit injury affected at the end of the last year. I'm actually a big fan of Josh Kelly, and he's probably at the moment the player that I will gamble on. This is not like a recommendation that everyone else should do that, but it's probably a recommendation that out of those five spots, you don't just, I don't think that you want to go safe in all of them. Some people might disagree with that and say that you should just pick five safe players that are going to play 22. I think that Kelly potentially has that really high upside compared to some of the others. So that 125 plus that you're talking about. So for me, he's in at the moment. We'll see if I can hold that willingness to gamble over the next couple of months.
Yeah, I like that risk-taking, Mark, but 15 games in 2018, 14 games in 2019, and a certain risk aversion I'm now starting to develop with starting midfield premiums has me a little bit with cold feet. But just as a reminder, in his fourth season, 2017, played 21 games, averaged 114. That 125 that we're touting isn't sort of speculative. He managed a pretty amazing average last year with a fairly injury-interrupted year as well. So now this next bloke has been auto-selected for a couple of seasons now. This year, maybe sort of reaching the limits of that where we actually have to properly evaluate him. Patrick Cripps played the 20 games, finished as the fifth highest averaging player, 10th when you look at overall points. What are your main considerations with Cripps, Mark? Because, I mean, I don't have any doubt that he'll finish in the top eight players overall by the end of the season. And certainly you could look at him and say there's a bit of upside there as well, especially if Carlton have a good year this year, which I think feels a bit crazy, him being sort of averaging 119, but he plays very similar to that Fife and Dangerfield type mold, you know?
Yeah, and they're all really, really valid points, and I guess that's where if I'm going to take a risk on Kelly, it'd be hard. I don't think it'd be advisable to start Cripps, Kelly, Fife, and have all of these guys stacked up, but I think that Cripps coming into his, seventh season, that's a time where a lot of players would maybe make that next jump into like super, super elite scoring. He's already got two seasons over 117. He has played 20 and 22 in the last 2 years. He is potentially in an improving Carlton side, which may just allow him to be able to score a little bit better. He did show, I guess the concerns are one around how knocked up he's going to get and how that's going to affect his scoring sort of during the winter months and as the season goes on. He did suffer a bit towards the end of last year with some down games related to the pretty close tags, but then he has those huge games in him that can sort of compensate for that. So for me, I'm probably leaning towards picking him this year. I can understand the doubts at his price. He does seem like he could be like the next Supercoach royalty sort of player. He's just so efficient and gets the balls in contested situations, kicks goals at important times, stands up for his team, can take a contested mark. He's an absolute gun of a player and keen to barrack him on even though he plays for Carlton.
Now, I'm largely agreeing with your analysis on Cripps, particularly sort of as it relates to Kelly. But I just want to reflect overall that we've now talked about 7 of the top 8 averaging players from last year, and we haven't had too many stones to throw so far. We're considering sort of value and how that affects our decision-making and who to start, but we're not necessarily questioning their ability to stay in that top 8, and that's part of the reason why at the start of the show we were talking about sort of these top 8 and potentially a few more, but really this class of players right now standing a little bit above that next rank. And so I think you can see sort of we're spoilt in terms of the riches that we have in that top end, and whether you go sort of the more safe option or a bit of the value option, at the end of the day, most of us should spend most of our time picking from this pool because, like I said, not a lot of stones to throw. And having said that, let's finish with the last of the top 8 averaging players, keeping in mind we've covered Dunkley and Bontempelli, who are 6 and 8 already. And that's Patrick Dangerfield. As I mentioned, he did miss the one game last year. So Akon is definitely, he gets banged up a bit as well, but one of the higher scoring potential players of the league. Averaged 115 last year, Mark. Was about available as a forward last year. This year, back to being a mid only. Most of the time, I have Dangerfield as a straight in, but this year, I'm struggling with that a little bit. Mark, I'm not sure how you feel about that.
I think probably a lot depends on where he plays. Like last year, he did play a decent amount forward. Do you think that Tim Kelly affects him?
It certainly does, I think. I think, if anything, that means that he's going to be more relied upon in the midfield. I know we're talking about a whole host of players filling in the void of Tim Kelly, including sort of Jack Stephen. But I feel like the main one, or maybe main two, that'll be refilling that void a little bit, Selwood, if he has a bit more of an injury-free year to play more crash and bash style than he did sort of floating around on the wing, and also Dangerfield.
I guess one of the interesting things to consider with Dangerfield is this sort of the decline of, like last year, was that the decline of Dangerfield in regards to his Supercoach scoring? Was that sort of drop off for the first time below 120 for a couple of years? Something that's going to be the new normal, or is he capable of getting back up to that 125 plus? He's only 29, and it does seem that he could definitely have a 120 plus year in him where he could just go huge. It's a tricky age. Like, some players definitely do drop off once they get to about 27, 28, 29, but some players can just keep going higher and harder. I don't know. I'm not totally sure on Dangerfield. He's probably on the edge, and I am a little bit worried that he could really burn me. His durability is actually really good.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to his early seasons, he really hasn't missed many games at all. So even though he does get a bit bashed up and he fakes injuries sometimes, looks like he's dead, needs to call an ambulance, and then gets back up and gets back into it.
Yeah, let me count. He's missed 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games in the last 9 seasons. And when he gets banged up, they just move him forward because he's that powerful and still plays his part. So just a recap on that. 2015, average 119.9 off 21 games. 2016, 131.8 playing 22 games. 2017, 136.4, 21 games. 2018, 121.7, 21 games. Last year, fair bit below that at 115.2. So he either presents a crap load of value moving into a bit more midfield with Tim Kelly and going to burn a whole host of people, or, as you mentioned, Mark, start of the decline. And I think either way, this will be sort of one of the picks in hindsight. It seems very bloody obvious either way. But when we still live in the world of unknowns, it's a bit harder to pick. It's weird to me looking at the potential value that he holds that we're even hesitating. But
I think if you look at if you do look at it that way, like 115 last year, it is hard to see him going below 115, which would be enough for a top 8 average over the course of the year, or was last year, and you could see that happening again this year. So if that is sort of like is potentially close to his bottom, unless he really suffers some injuries that affect his season, then perhaps it might be a bit silly to not bring him in.
Might be sort of overthinking it. Some players are victims of their own sort of high standards, and he might be sort of in that little bucket. Anyway, let's move on to a few of the other players who didn't quite crack the top 8 on average, but they cracked the top 8 on total points. And a few favorites here, nobody surprising at all. In 5th, we have Adam Treloar, actually, on overall total points. And on 7th, Clayton Oliver. What do you reckon about both of those picks, Mark? There's certainly no reason why they, at their age, they should be going backwards. They could even improve as well. Total points means that sort of durability certainly has played into their favor last season, although we know Treloar has had a bit more of a history of hamstring issues in the past. Do you like taking a punt on either of those two versus the eight we've discussed so far?
Treloar seems almost like a player you want to pick over a short period, someone that maybe you bring in that could go on a sick run towards just sort of towards the end of the year or something like that. Like 113 last year was his highest average ever, and he did do it over 22 games, so he would have been a pretty decent pick last year. Bit worried about whether he gets enough of the ball or is effective enough with the ball to actually go higher than that. I know that we've both been burnt from him in the past. Out of the two, I do like Oliver. He hasn't missed a game for 3 years. In his second season, went 111 and went less than that last year, and has had a 114 season. I think that probably his season last year was a lot dependent on he had some maybe two shoulder recos or two shoulder surgeries towards the end of 2018, which would have affected his season, plus Melbourne's really unexpected dip in form. So I think that Oliver, out of the two, is definitely the one that presents the most value to me and is the most likely to prove to be an obvious pick. So Oliver being one player that actually was less than the 115 last year that I really think is a good chance of getting in that category this year is definitely someone strongly considered for my team.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. I think looking at Treloar and his foot disposal skills, I find it hard to see him really breaking into that top bracket unless he gets sort of Dane Swan type numbers where irrespective of what they do with the ball, he gets so much of it that sort of he overcomes that. Now, last player sort of in this top bracket that we're going to talk about actually missed last year, and I was expecting him to get a bigger discount, Mark, than he actually got, I guess. Part of the reason for that is they didn't want to maybe make the game too bloody easy, but he played zero games last year.
I think you're also forgetting how expensive he was from the year before.
Was he?
Yeah. So I think that he would have been in the 700s at the start of last year, going up for 129 average.
Steeper discount, at least in the 500K. What is this? 630K for a bloke that missed the whole of last year?
I think it's actually a good price. The reason why I think it's a good price is because of what you said about not making the game too easy. If it was 550, he would be in 100% of competitive team.
Yeah.
Where at 630, that's like at 600 almost, like 590, 600, he'd probably be in like 80% of teams. But at 630, it's just you can get other really, really good players at that price. So I think that makes it a really interesting call.
Now, based on the crowd of the top options that we've discussed so far, he is close to the bottom of the list, only ahead of Josh Kelly and Bontempelli. So picked in 15% of teams as it currently stands of recording, but the nous of the crowd has Dangerfield at 28, Dunkley at 16, Cripps at 51, Fife at 39, Neil at 27, McRae at 30. Wisdom of the crowd says that potentially we should be hesitating a little bit. Is that, you reckon, just a symptom of the fact that we haven't seen him for a whole year, Mark? What do you think?
Surely people haven't forgotten how amazing he is at this game.
Yeah.
I think it might be a little bit like there are some reasons, and one of those is that we might not see him during the preseason series. Hawthorn have said that they're tentatively saying he'll be right for round one, which to me means he's almost definitely going to be right for round one. I think that we're still waiting on a bit of news. We're still waiting on a reminder that he's fit and that he's going to be back and ready to go. And it's always tricky to know how someone comes back from a broken leg. Not everyone can come back and be fully fit and be the same player that they were before. Especially seeing as Mitchell relied so heavily on his running capacity and just getting to every ball and getting in space and getting away from contests and his strength. It could be affected by all of that and because of the price, right? Like it's just so close to a lot of these other guys. I think that wisdom of the crowd is actually a pretty good reason to be picking players, like, and that is something you should be considering. I think that the crowd generally, if they're going a certain way, there's generally a pretty good reason for that. And picking a pod just to be different can often punish you as often it'll sort of work out. So 15% is an interesting number, but I do expect it to get higher before the season starts.
All right, Mark, we've talked through plenty of good options. Now, going to put you and myself on the spot a little bit here. I think we went through 12 options there. Now, put 12 into five, Mark. Would you struggle to do that?
Yeah, bloody oath, I'm struggling to do that. I'm changing my team as we go here. We started off talking about the Bulldogs players and how I would be definitely keen to have one and be okay with having all three. But because we haven't talked about them for about 20 minutes, none of them are in my team right now. it's really, really tricky to pick exactly which five you're going to pick. I think that there's probably, out of the 12 we discussed, nine of them will turn out to be really good picks anyway. And one of them probably a really, really crucial pick. So, yeah, it's just about narrowing which five balances your side the best.
Yeah, I'm going to take a little bit of a stab. I'm going to have Neil, McRae, Kelly, and Dangerfield as my main four. And my fifth will be Mitchell if preseason signs are strong enough. Otherwise, Clayton Oliver. Yeah, so probably more notable omissions of Fifan, Cripps, Dunkley, and Bontempelli in that.
That's crazy.
Which feels dirty.
It does. It's going to be real. Maybe we should just have eight gun midfielders. I guess hopefully all of the rookies are in the back line and the forwards, and we can just pick all of these guns to start with. I will have a crack, though. I would say McRae, Danger, Kelly, and Cripps be my first four.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, same as you, Oliver versus Mitchell for that fifth spot. Almost certainly Mitchell and Oliver will both make my starting team, but I've sort of got them in that fifth spot at the same time. So, yeah, I've picked six, sorry.
That's all right. I mean, I think where we varied the most was we were actually pretty damn similar, except I had Neil where you had Cripps.
And weirdly, we both had Kelly. I don't think that would be normal, is it? Like, he's the lowest percentage out of all of them.
Yeah, no, we're getting green eyes at the moment, Mark. Look at that upside. All right, now we've spent a fair bit on this first show, Mark, so I don't think we're going to run through the rest in too much depth, but I just wanted to read out some names here, and if any sort of you wanted to touch on, we can. Otherwise, we'll move past them. These are players who have the potential to crack into this top echelon. It is tough to crack, and we're struggling to even pick the five or six. They certainly have a tall task to make it into our teams, but I've got Zach Merritt, Matt Crouch, Tim Kelly, and there's some young guns coming up. Now, Tim Taranto, Stephen Cornelio, James Warple, Taylor Adams, Jacob Hopper, Dom Sheed, Jack Steele, Hugh McCluggage, Sam Walsh, Joel Selwood, Dan Hanabry. These are riskier players. They're players with potentially a bit of upside. They're players that potentially present a little bit of value, but clear question marks about whether or not they can break into that class. Any of them interest you that you want to call out?
I would say that only one of them will average over 115 for the year. And I can't work out who that is, so I won't be picking.
Well, I thought you were going to go with Zach Merritt.
dropped from the leadership group. That may trigger some anger in him. I'm not sure how the Bombers are going to go this year. Cornelio definitely has the skills, but a bit of an injury issue. Taranto, probably only in his fourth season, so that'd be a massive effort. Crouch, a bit of injury the last couple of years, has never done it before. Tim Kelly, what will happen with the move to West Coast? I think that he is potentially the most likely to go 115 out of that group, but is he actually capable of that? Like he'll be performing well above what he has in the past. He would be the least surprising to me out of those 10 players of making 115.
All right, why don't we do this, Mark? And I think it's particularly relevant because this class of players relies on a good preseason, I think, to pick them with some confidence going in. If you're going to pick a player with risk, it has to come with a certain form that suggests a breakout or suggests that value is on offer. So let's take a pause on this list and potentially revisit them after some of the community series games. Probably if I had to call one out outside of Tim Kelly, because I agree with that, it's probably looking at the younger class of player. I wonder whether or not Sam Walsh has the goods. Like he's one of the most impressive first year players I've ever seen. You know, back in the Pendlebury, Selwood, whatever days, you could ride those sorts of players all the way to the top. And I wonder with one of the most prepared 18-year-olds I've ever seen, whether or not he could be one to carry that sort of torch. And yeah, but we want a good preseason to have a bit more of a crack at that.
Yeah, look, I don't totally disagree with that. Oliver, what, averaged 110 in his second year, and Walsh is a better player than Oliver, I would say, by the end of their careers. So.
All right, Mark, so that's going to wrap up our first show back together. Was there anything else that had come up in your mind as we've been recording that you want to talk about or anything to sign off with?
I think that really what affects some of these decisions is what are people doing in the rucks. So are you going Grundy Gorn? And if you are, that probably affects whether you're having four or five premium mids. And if you do go Grundy and Gorn, it may push you towards players that are offering more value in those midfield slots. So I think that answering the Grundy Gorn question is probably the first question you answer when you're picking your team.
Yeah, very much agree with that. And I think beyond the two being clear standout options and that being a driver to select the two of them, potentially a reason to go away from the Gorn-Grundy combo is if you're presented with a high-value option, because I think regardless, most of us will want to get to Gorn-Grundy by the end of the season. So I don't think you would want to take a compromise value option that that you're not going to upgrade, because that means punting against one of Gorn and Grundy for the entirety of the season. So part of coming to that decision will unfurl as the preseason plays out. And if we are able to identify any value candidates in the rucks. All right, so that's going to do us for the first episode back. Mark, I was a little bit out of sorts trying to put my brain together even to come back for the first show. But as always, speaking to you has been an enjoyable process, and especially in the preseason to help collate some of my own thoughts. Hopefully that was of benefit to you, our listener, as well. And we thank you again very much for joining us for another season, our 12th season. Don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you are willing and able to support the show. Mark and I are about to nick off now and record a little bit of a bonus episode for our patrons, and we'll keep that going over the course of the preseason. So with that, we'll sign off. We'll be back again in another week with some more hopefully cracking information. I think we'll record one more before the start of the preseason game. So still a fair bit of water to go under the bridge, but we have made a good start. Thank you, Mark, for joining back on for another season, mate.
Good to talk to you, buddy.
See ya. Yeah. Yeah.